Francisco, and thank you very much. And I know the reason that I'm here today is I'm the author of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, The Ultimate Visual History, which just came out last month from Inside Editions. And it's been my pleasure over the last 2.5 years to talk to people like our panelists here, and you'll recognize a lot of their names, and get the inside story on the turtles all the way from the very beginning. And how many of you know that the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles started as a comic book?
Yeah.
Give yourselves a pat on the back, because not everybody knows that. And, so I'm going to start by, let's go down the line and just introduce yourselves. And
hey guys, how you doing? My name is Tom Waltz. I'm one of the writers for the new IW. I'm also a fellow fan, so it's exciting to be here with you guys.
Hi, my name is Kevin Eastman. Absolutely phenomenal.
It
covers every aspect of turtleisms and turtledom and everything, and I suggest you buy it. Start your Christmas shopping early. It's fantastic. And I'm the hugest fan of this guy here. I was invited back into the IDW series 3 years ago, and I've had the best time since Peter Laird and I did the first original run on the turtles, working for IDW in this new book. And it's amazing to me that we're sitting here 30 years later, and I love to say this, that it's all your fault. We would not be here, not for you. Just raise a hand to Peter Laird. Peter Laird.
Well, hey, my name is Townsend Coleman, and cowabunga, dudes! Yeah, I was just lucky enough to get involved in this crazy thing back in 1987. And it's just been an incredible ride since. It's so amazing to me that it is not only alive and well, but spawning a whole new generation of Turtles fans. So this is great.
My name is Kino, and I deliver pizzas.
Kids, as well as the Nickelodeon relaunch, which happened in fall 12. So thank you very much, and we look forward to your continued support.
Yeah!
Hey everybody, my name is Lloyd Goldfine, and I was the writer and producer of the 4Kids 2000 Ninja Turtle series.
Turtles Forever. Turtles Forever, the coolest turtle movie ever.
So I'm going to start off by jumping the line and asking everybody here to sign my book. But, you know, let's
Tom charges for signatures.
Yeah. But let's take it back to the beginning, and obviously one guy in this panel was here from the start, and that's Kevin. And can you take us back to November 1983 when this whole thing kicked off?
Well, much to everybody's disbelief, there was no alcohol involved in the creation of the turtles. No, I was a starving artist. I was working in a lobster restaurant in Maine. I moved to Northampton area, and I was riding on a bus one day, and I saw this little magazine full of cartoons, and it was in the next town over. And so I went over there to try to sell some of my cartoons, and they said, well, we don't really do that kind of stuff anymore. But you should really meet this guy, Peter Laird. He draws the same weird stuff you do. And so I wrote Peter a letter back in those days, no cell phones, no faxes, anything. Wrote Peter a letter, and he wrote me back. I just said, hey, we'd love to get together. I don't know anybody in the area, and I'm a big comic geek, and I love to talk about comics, and I draw a little bit. his apartment in this tiny little apartment, probably about as big as a stage, in Northampton, Massachusetts, and on the wall was a Jack Kirby original. And I grew up eating, sleeping, breathing Jack Kirby. That's all I wanted to do when I was a kid, was become Jack Kirby and write and draw my own stories. And I just about passed out. So Peter and I hit it off, and our kind of love of Jack Kirby was the thing that really spawned it, of many things. And so we worked on a couple of short stories together right away. I went back to Cooking Lobsters. And later that year, he ended up moving up to New Hampshire, which is about 20 minutes from where I lived in Maine. And he had a room available to him. This house is, him and his wife was renting. And he said, when you get done killing lobsters for the summer, why don't you come down and we'll form a studio. We'll see if we can team up and sell our work together. And we'll call it Mirage Studios, is the name we selected, because it really was a mirage. It wasn't really a studio. It was just two guys with overstuffed easy chairs in this living room. And that was like in, let me see, September of 1983. And in November of 1983, Pete was fond of watching what I thought was some of the worst TV shows, like The A-Team and T.J. Hooker and stuff. And so I thought it was my job to annoy him as much as possible when he was watching his favorite shows. So one night I did this sketch of a turtle standing upright. He had nunchucks wrapped to his arms. He had a mask on, and I kind of tossed it on his desk and said, this is the next big thing, ha, ha, ha. It's a Ninja Turtle. And of course, he laughed. He thought it was really funny. Studio one-upmanship. He did a drawing to top my drawing, and I laughed. And of course, I had to top his drawing. So I said, well, if there's one, why not four? So I did this pencil sketch of four turtles, each having, holding different weapons. I put this little kind of comic booky Ninja Turtle block on the top. And I gave it to him, and he then inked it. And when he inked it, he added Teenage Mutant to the title. And we were just laughing ourselves silly. We said, this really is the dumbest thing ever. So we got up the next day, and as I love to say, we didn't have any distracting pain work going on. So we said, why don't we come up with a story that tells how these characters got to be the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And that was November of 1983. The first issue came out in May of 1984, which, can you believe, is 30 years now? I know. It was awesome. Peter and I did a signing recently up in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. It was at a free comic book day for a store called Jetpack Comics, and the guy that owns Jetpack Comics held the original comic convention in 1984 that we premiered the book at. And so May 3rd, we were sitting there signing books going like, man, this is just crazy. 30 years later, and we're still doing this stuff, and it's been such a fantastic journey, and that's basically how it started. We'll fill in some of the rest as we sort of go
and
on.
And I'll mention one of the kids who bought that first print of that first issue at his local comic shop in May 1984 is a name you might recognize, Sierra Vialli, who had to cancel at the last minute, unfortunately, because of other obligations at the convention. But he's the executive producer of the current Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cartoon on Nickelodeon, which you're all fans, right? Everybody.
Absolutely love it. That's fantastic. When I met first time I met Ciro, I actually knew him before he got the gig on the Turtles. I was a big fan of his work on so many of the cartoon shows he was doing. And as soon as he started putting together the show, he invited me over and he said, I just want to show you what we're doing and what I'd like to do. And so we walked into the studio. All the original Turtle comics, the original black and white was pinned up all over the walls. He had already this massive sketchbook of the things that he wanted to do, and told me about his father on the pizza parlor in Philadelphia, and he grew up eating pizza and dragging his mom, making his mom take him to all the Turtle movies and all that stuff. So he grew up like this guy grew up, but I think a bunch of other people, a lot of you guys out there grew up on Turtles, and to me it's amazing because I have the absolute dream job of a lifetime. I get to write draw Turtle stories, and that's your fault again. But so many of you guys, I'm going to be mailing you all checks at the end of the show. But much like Tom, and Tom's got a great story. I mean, he grew up as a fan of the Turtles, and much like Ciro did, when he was putting together the new show, they get to pick sort of across multiple Turtle universes to come up with a new foundation to build stories upon, like the Nickelodeon show and what we're doing with the IDW series.
And so Peter Laird's name came up. As it should, repeatedly, and
busy signing somebody's book. Hold on.
That's right. Some people.
In the early days, would we publish the first issue with 6,000 copies, and actually that summer, after it was released in May, I went back to Cooking Lobsters. We never thought we'd sell one single copy of the first issue. When it actually sold out, we sold 3,000 copies, and it was like, okay, now to go back to the real world. So I went back to Cooking Lobsters, and then that fall, Peter called me and he said, you know, we keep getting calls from distributors and comic stores wanting to know when you're going to put out the next issue, and we're like, well, we never thought we'd sell the first one, so we never thought of doing a second issue. So we sort of plotted out a story and solicited for it through the direct market system, and when we get the orders in January of 1985, it was 15,000 copies. And Pete called me really excitedly on the phone and said, hey, you know what, if we do six of these a year, we'll make about $2,000 each pre-tax per issue. We can pay our rent, eat all the macaroni and cheese we want, and draw comic books for a living. So that was really, the dream came true. Then we became, you know, really fat, eating a lot of macaroni and cheese, through comic books all the time. No, but every issue after that, the sales kept going up and up and up, and we're like, oh my God, this is amazing. Not only get to write and draw and create our own stories, they're really selling. People seem to be gravitating to them. Along with that success comes agents and people from Hollywood, and the first bunch of them that called us, we were fairly disgusted by. And just said no, and we were very cocky, I guess, because we were making money and we were happy we were drawing comic books. So we never thought it would be anything other than a comic book until one day we met Mark Friedman. It was so funny, he called us and he said, I think this is going to be much more than just a comic book. Let me talk to you about it. We said, look, if you want to drive up from New York, we'll listen to what you have to say, and that'll be that. We figured we'd just sort of send them off like we did the others. So Peter and I had just gotten our first office, so it wasn't so much a mirage anymore. We had gotten this really dumpy little office, and we were literally repainting it, and covered in paint. We got a knock on the door, and we opened the door, and there's this guy in like an $800 suit, you know, perfect hair, expensive briefcase, and he does one of those freeze frame things. He opens, it's like, Eastman and Laird? We're like, yeah, come on in. So we started with this deal. He said, you know, 5-year deal, it's going to be this, it's going to be this, I'll control all the rights, and we're like, no, 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 and no. So he got off his New York sort of pitch thing, and we went and had a cup of coffee, and he said, look, I really, really sincerely think I can do something with this. And we said, well, we'll give you 30 days. If you can come back to us with anything interesting in 30 days, we'll give you another 30 days, and so on and so on. And Mark just went out and nailed it. He put together, you know, us with Playmates Toys and Murakami Wolf at that time, Fred Wolf Animation. He literally put together the right pieces with the right partners, and that's really, you know, was how the Turtles started down that path. And we had a great friend and a great agent who took really good care of the Turtles, and he fought for our rights because he made sure that we retained control over the scripts and the work of the toys and all the work on the movies. He was a great guy. We worked with him for a long time. He was awesome.
Yeah. So yeah, one of the, and I'm sure you've all got them on your bookshelves like I do, but one of the early deals that Mark struck was with Playmates Toys. And how many of you have at least 4 Turtles figures in your collection? but let's talk to Pat a little bit about that and his role with Playmates, and he's seen a lot over the years.
Yeah, I've been with Playmates for 16 years, so unfortunately I wasn't with Playmates during the original launch, but I've heard a lot about it. And you know, like Kevin said, Mark Friedman played a big part in pitching Playmates Toys on the Ninja Turtles, and my understanding is that they actually tried to pitch it to the Mattel and Hasbro's of the world, and thank God, they passed on it. And our chairman at the time, Thomas Chan, had the foresight to, you know, really express some interest in it, and there was another guy by the name of Jerry Sachs from the Sachs Finley Advertising Agency, and I know he was brought into the game very early on as well. And he's the one that really helped get it off the ground from an entertainment standpoint and TV show. And you know, Playmates had a lot riding on it because they actually funded the first 5 episodes of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles back in, I think it was fall of 1987. So, you know, everything really, really fell in place.
Handsome Jerry Sachs was this awesome guy. He looked like, you imagine the Penguin from the old Batman series? if you took away the tuxedo, that was Jerry Sachs. He was a really funny guy, but he was awesome and really smart. It's funny, just reminded me of a couple of highlights. I remember when we were first working with Carl Aronian, developing the toys and the look. You know, that was, I think for Carl and I, it was like 50 pounds ago or 60 pounds ago. We were so young, we see some of those old pictures. But it was so great because the interaction was really wonderful, and like things like, they said, well, how can you tell the turtles apart? And Peter and I were like, duh, the weapons, dude, you know, come on. And he goes, he said, no, we have to come up with a couple of things that we can sort of help differentiate them a little bit between the toy line, different characters and make them more individual as toys. And so, you know, a lot of people wonder where the different colored bandanas come from. That was Pete's idea. Pete said, well, why don't we give different colored bandanas? You know, blue for Leo, Regal, Leader, you know, Raphael, red, sort of rage, Michelangelo, comedic, funny, just seem to fit in, and Donatello, you know, the techno geeky, you know, sort of uses a bow staff, so it's a bit of a pacifist, a monk sort of thing. And I remember two things when we then worked with them on the two highlights of that 87-88 year was, we never believed the toys would actually come out, much like we thought we'd never sell the first issue. We never believed the TV show would appear, we never believed toys would come out, but we worked very hard on them. And then it wasn't until December of 1987 when the TV guide came out. You remember the TV guide? And we actually saw it listed in the program in the TV guide, and we were like, oh my god, this is actually going to be on the air. And we watched it, it was a big hit, and they ordered more, and that gave then Playmates the confidence to go ahead with the toy line. So in June of 88, when the toys came out, Peter and I went down to, we had to go see him on the toy shelf. We wanted to see him in the toy store, and KB Toys was the big toy chain at the time. So we drove down to Springfield to the local KB store, and as we're walking down through the store down to the action figure aisle, we were just about to the action figure aisle, and this woman, this mother, is dragging this young boy out of the action figure aisle, and she's saying, no, I'm not buying you one of those stupid Ninja Turtles. Oh no, what have we got? but those are some really awesome highlights of the early days when we did that stuff.
And I was that boy.
that's great. That leads into our next guest, and that's the reason that I had to think for about a quarter of a second before I said absolutely I will commit 2 years to writing about the Ninja Turtles. When that cartoon first aired in December of 87, I was an instant fan. And that's in large part due to the incredible script, the fun animation, and the really talented voice actors who worked on the cartoon. And can you talk about how did you get the job in the first place?
Oh my gosh, I've been in town. You know, you started this in May of 84. I was just quitting a 10-year radio career at that point and moved out here 30 years ago. Exactly. So was doing a little bit of animation, and at the time was doing a show called Fraggle Rock.
And yeah!
And I was just this lucky son of a gun. I was doing the voice of Gobo on Fraggle Rock at the time. And I remember the voice director, Stu Rosen, came in to one of our sessions and said, you guys aren't going to believe this next job I'm going to be casting and directing. And he opens his bag and pulls out a copy of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And none of us had heard of it. And we looked at it and figured, you said you promised you weren't drinking when you started this. And we figured somebody must have been smoking heavily when they started this thing. we looked at this, there's no way this thing is going to, you know, take off and be a success. But they brought us in to audition for it. Rob Paulson, who was working on Fraggle Rock at the time also, and Robbie and I were just lucky enough to, you know, be two of the cats to get gigs on this show. And I mean, it was just amazing. I remember that it was the five-part miniseries, right, in 87, that you just like latched onto. I think a lot of kids did, because that's what turned this thing around real quickly. And you know, we went right into recording the series, and that started in 88. But it was me and Ron and Barry Gordon and Cam Clark, and boy, lucky SOBs we were. Yeah.
It was great seeing you guys in that. Now there's a new Turtle documentary coming out, Turtle Power, and it was great seeing you guys all together.
description of Michelangelo that you had for your audition?
Yeah, basically, you know, he was a surfer dude, he was a party dude. I was trying to think, boy, surfer dude, you know, I could think of Valley Girl is what came to my mind, and Sean Penn in Fast Times at Ridgemont High was the picture I got, and he was sort of that, you know, kind of burnt out, you know. Well, it can't be like too totally burnt out. You know? He's got to have a little something going upstairs. So I sort of took it from there, and got cast. And you know, when they cast us and we showed up at our first session, I remember that they knew that Barry was going to be Donatello. They knew that Rob was Raphael, but they hadn't decided whether I was going to be Michelangelo or Leonardo. And same with Cam. Until the first recording session. And so we did a read-through. We were going to do a read-through, and Stu said, Tony, why don't you just take Michelangelo first? Cam, you do Leonardo. And we'll do our first read-through. We'll record it. And then we'll switch, do another read-through, and then sort of make up our minds from there. And after that first read-through, they got distracted with other stuff and just never switched us back. So we went and did the second read-through, and I said, well, Stu, you want me to do Leonardo now? And he said, no, just leave it the way it is. And I said, okay, and I ended up being Michelangelo. I could have just as easily ended up being Leonardo, I suppose, had, cards fallen the other way that day.
How many shows was it in the end? Was it 200 and what, 280?
Just under 200, I think. It was 193 or 194, something like that.
That's crazy.
A lot of episodes, and 10 seasons, and boy, what a great experience for me. I mean, Rich, and to be here, 30 years later, and still be able to say, I'm a Michelangelo Ninja Turtle, dude! That's I'm lucky to think I have to.
Ask your parents about Fast Times at Ridgemont High. It's an older movie, but it's worth it. You guys conquered comic books, animation, toys, so it was obviously the next step was going to be motion pictures.
Yeah, that was when our agent, when Mark said, he said, look, if this actually works, you said you'd have an introduction year where, it comes out and it works to a certain level of success. You'll have a second year, and that'll be your biggest year. And then the next year, you're going to be in the discount bins. And we're like, okay, good. So we put everything in the bank. And when it just kept going, we started getting a lot of interest from different people that wanted to do movies. Some of them weren't that good of an idea. I think one of them was Gallagher, Bobcat Goldthwait, Sam Kennison, and Billy Crystal were going to actually paint their faces green, wear these turtle shells, and they were going to fight these roller skating foot nuns that were just—it was crazy. It was like it was from Roger Corman's New World Pictures. I still have the original pitch. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen, and we just said, "I know." And so we kept going around, and it was Mark then had a meeting with a company called Golden Harvest, and this was before New Line, and they discussed it with Tom Gray, one of the heads of Golden Harvest. And Tom sort of sat down, and Mark showed him the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle comic book, and Tom was like, no. And he actually literally started to get up as he sort of looking at the pages. He goes, wait a minute. We might be able to make this work. And so they literally put together New Line Cinema, whose only success at that time had been Nightmare on Elm Street. They pulled some awesome actors from Hong Kong as sort of the basis. They brought in the awesome and incredible Steve Barron as director for the film. Who literally, he went through we had this 500-page collected book, and he picked all parts of issue one, the Leonardo one-shot, issue 10 and 11. He said, this is the movie I want to make. And Pete and I were just like so grateful that Steve was not only so cool, but he really wanted to go back to the source material. And then he brought in Todd Langdon to write it, and then it was the epic sort of most nerve-wracking part of the whole thing is how are we going to make these things come to life on the big screen? And Steve had done a lot of work with Jim Henson, and he brought Jim Henson in, and that was like already half the stress went away that we knew had Jim Henson and his creature show up on our side, and then watched them slowly build these characters. bring them to life in a way that we just never could have imagined. In fact, another anecdote is when Pete and I went down to the movie lot in Wilmington, North Carolina, the first time they're shooting. It was a night shoot. When you go into a studio back lot, it's like as you're walking towards the back lot, it looks like a construction site ready for demolition. It's ready to collapse with the staging and stuff everywhere. But then you round this corner, and there it is. New York City is as bright as day and night. It's beautifully lit, and there's all these foot ninjas running around, and this poor little Steve Barron sitting in the middle of the sea of people asking him a million questions, lighting this and wetting down that and dressing this. And we walked around yet another corner, and there's the second time around shop, just like we'd drawn in the original comic books, and you get goosebumps. And then a little bit further down, there's, you know, the turtles in full costume. It's like Michelangelo's got a sombrero on, and he's dancing with this. And we literally, it's like the moment in the Toy Story, we just stopped dead and went, you know, holy smokes, this is actually going to work. I can't believe how amazing and how real they look. And a lot of the technology that they created to bring those turtles to life was literally created just for that movie. I think they patented, I don't know how many things, just to make them work. And one of the guys that got to wear Donatello in the first movie is this guy.
Yeah!
That was Donatello. All that, you know, and he'll tell you, that was crazy what you guys did in those suits. It's like insane. Seriously.
Yeah, it was really awesome. I had already become familiar with the Ninja Turtles from my younger brother, Santino, who's a big fan, and I had already, you know, bought him toys for Christmas and things like that. So when I had the opportunity, Pat Johnson, who was the stunt coordinator and fight choreographer of the first two Ninja Turtle films, who was also the fight choreographer for the original Karate Kid, he had called me up and asked me to, you know, if I'd be interested in working on the show. And, you know, it was a lot of hard work, but, you know, from the time that they flew me out to London to get, you know, a body cast over at the Jim Henson, you know, workshop, and then meeting the four Hong Kong guys who were basically at that time period, you know, the number one Hong Kong stuntman, it was just an awesome experience, and you knew every step of the way that you were part of something special, so I'm really grateful to be here 30 years later.
On the panel, I watched Sidekicks when it originally aired.
And Surf Ninja.
Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, we had such a great time. We get to watch it again on the big screen together when Ernie got to come out from under the shell and become Keno. We thought it was great that he got to be out there front and center for the second movie. That was really awesome. And we've been pretty much friends ever since. And we get to see it on the big screen again, and it was pretty fun to see it. It had been a long time since I saw it on the big screen, so it was fun to sit there and hear the audience reaction here now, what, 20 years later.
Yeah, and it's been really awesome to see the Ninja Turtles come back the way it has, you know, bigger and better than ever. And for me, I, you know, travel around the country as well, teaching martial arts, and, you know, the parents are a lot more excited to see me than the kids are.
They're like, don't you know who that is? That's Kino!
And the kids are like, no. So, but it's really just, like I said, it's awesome to be able to see something, you know, span the course of many generations and to be part of it. So I'm really just stoked to be here.
Okay, and yeah, by special request, we're going to skip over the next mutation. And we'll talk to Lloyd. Unless Kevin wants to wait for that.
Venus. Now,
I gotta say, I've talked to no offense to anyone who worked, the hardworking people who worked on the show, but all the fans I've talked to, I'm still waiting for someone to say Venus is my favorite.
To say who is?
To say that Venus is their favorite turtle.
Well,
I'm still
Tom
waiting.
And I are gonna, no, we can keep that secret.
No, we're not.
But it's just funny not to go off on that, but it's like Venus started as a fifth turtle named Kirby. We'd actually written for the fourth movie that was abandoned, and when we were developing the TV show with Saban, it was like they literally at the 11th hour, whether they would give the show the go-ahead or not, was they said, well, we're not going to do a fifth turtle. So the fifth turtle was already there. It was firmly, the scripts were written, everything was Margaret Lesh at Fox said, no, I wanted a girl turtle. So we, Pete jump shipped, and I worked hard to make that show work and had a lot of fun doing it. But I know it's not the favorite turtle version of any sense of the word, but let's talk about Turtles Forever. That was really cool.
Yeah, we'll go into that, yeah. Turtles kind of went away they never go away very long, I guess. That's why we're still celebrating them 30 years later. But Lloyd was on part with the Four Kids cartoon. How many of you are fans of the Four Kids? That's a great show. Let's have Lloyd talk about that.
Well, I was at Four Kids, and Four Kids did a lot of anime adaptions, and they weren't really doing any full-up animated productions. Those were post-production kind of shows. And I was desperate to do a full-up animation job. So I was looking for a property, and I had heard through the grapevine that there were people pitching Ninja Turtles. And I heard that the pictures weren't that good. So I quickly busted out a pitch, and we got a meeting with Pete of the Mirage, and apparently the other pitches were like, oh, Casey and April are high school students, and it was all that kind of stuff. And the pitch to Pete was, we want to do the comic book. We want to just do the comic book. They're straight up ninjas. Casey's a vigilante. And, he was thrilled. So that's how Ninja Turtles started for me.
Okay. And
one of the finals, it was an awesome run. I really loved that show. I watched all of them. I rewatched them all again with my 8-year-old and, well, 8 now. But I remember when one of the final pieces you put together was the Turtles Forever movie, right?
Yeah.
Which was, I remember when somebody sent me an email and said, this is what you wanted to do, and I just said, this is either going to be the worst thing ever or just going to be absolutely fantastically brilliant, and it actually was the second one. I just thought it was, when it came out, I don't know, after that came out, because Pete and I did that thing at the end.
Yeah.
But I just remember fan after fan after fan were coming out and saying that it was just so awesome. Yeah. Thank you for doing that.
That was great fun. For a long time, we were trying to do something like that. We had wanted the 2003 Turtles to meet the original Turtles, and there were all kinds of reasons why we couldn't make that happen. A lot of legal reasons, rights reasons. And then, towards the end of our run, and it was about the time that Nickelodeon was going to get the rights to the Turtles, those issues cleared up. And I was like, okay, we can really make this happen. And this is kind of, 25th anniversary was coming up, and it was a little bit like the end of an era for a little while there. We said, let's really do this, let's blow this up. And so not only were we able to use the original Turtles, our Turtles, but we also got to do the black and white Turtles, the comic book Turtles, and that was just awesome.
I can't say enough good things about Turtles Forever. If you are a fan of any of the animated versions of the Turtles, you should track that one down. And we'll fast forward a bit to 2009. That's Peter Laird basically has been doing Turtles half of his life and was probably getting a little tired of all the meetings with signing off on every last thing. So Nickelodeon, he worked out a deal. And that led to the great cartoon series. I mean, since no one's here to talk about that, since we're running out of time, we'll go to one of the other incredible things that came out of that, which is IDW getting the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles license. And how many of you are reading the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? That's a great thing to turn things over to the top.
How are you guys doing?
All right.
I'll rewind even further, because Kevin always gives me more credit for being younger than I am. So I actually, in a way, grew up on the Turtles, but actually through the eyes of my kids, because when the Turtle comic book came out, I lived in a really small town called Clinton, Michigan, in southeastern Michigan, and we mostly had livestock. There weren't a lot of comic book stores. It was a really small farm town. So my exposure to comics at that time was through my cousin's husband. We stole his comics all the time. He had a huge collection. He didn't know we were just raiding his long box. And he was a big Marvel guy, so he was reading the Marvel stuff. Fast forward to 87, and I'm in the Marines, saw the comics through my friend the Marines, and then we started watching. I started watching the Fred Wolf stuff on video, and I was probably a little older than the intended audience, but it was a lot of fun, and it's always fun to watch things with your kids. And the one episode that really jumped out at me, if anybody's reading our comic book, was the Hot Rod Teenagers from Dimension X. And I remember thinking, these are the goofiest characters I've ever seen, but they could kind of be badass too. I think I would love to do something with them. Fast forward a little further, and my daughter, who's 10 now, was really into the 4Kids series. And that's my absolute favorite. I love the 4Kids series. That was a revelation for me because I think it struck a tone I needed at my age, and I was a little more advanced in age at that point, that it gave it kind of this a little more mature feel, but you never lost the fun. And that's what I think the movies did so well too, especially the first two movies. And so it was true to the source material, especially early on. So you were, especially like the Leonardo one shot, the way they played that out, I think it was Shredder Strikes Back. Absolutely love that. We must have watched that 10,000 times at our house. And so, fast forward a little further. IDW is going after I'm working in comics, and I'm an editor at IDW. I've written some other comics, and we are going after this license. And initially, I had no involvement at IDW. I was not going to be an editor on Turtles. I was more of a cheerleader in the office because it was at a point where everybody was thinking, is it going to happen again? Is it worth going after this license? Are people really buying Turtles comics? Should we really pursue this? And my first thing was, I went in and I went more of a, I took a business approach, and I said, I don't think Nickelodeon and Viacom are going to spend that much money unless they're planning on backing this thing. So I said, there's going to be Turtles in front of people, so why don't we get involved? And so we were getting pitches from outside writers, freelancers, and there were some really good pitches, but every time they came to the office, we would have these editorial meetings, we would meet with Nickelodeon, and again, I was more on the outside just watching the process. Nothing was clicking. And then at one point, Ted Adams, who's the CEO of IDW, knows Kevin, and invited Kevin in to be involved. And he asked you to do covers or anything Kevin wanted to do. He knew he was interested in being involved in Turtles again. So would he like to be involved? And at the time, he said, I would even love to be involved in plotting if possible. And so we were sitting in a meeting one day, and so we thought, we got Kevin on board. That's great. What a coup. This is something that we can really work for us, but who's going to write it alongside Kevin? And then our editor-in-chief, Chris Weil, looked over, and I was just sitting, again, an observer in the meeting, ready to cheer on anything that would make sure we would get that license. I said, why don't you write it, Tom? And then Ted said, yeah, why don't you write it, Tom? You like the Turtles. And they said, well, do you want to do it? And I said, well, what do you think I said? And I said, yes. And so they said, can you come up with a proposal? And I said, I already had some ideas that were bouncing in my head. And they said, can you have it by later this afternoon? Because time was starting to run out. And I said, I can. So basically, the original proposal, if anybody's following our comic, I had this idea that we would kind of fidget with the origin story. I didn't want to get away from the ooze. I didn't want to get away from the mutagen. All that stuff is important to me. But what Turtles Forever did for me was gave me the courage to say, we can combine things here. You know, those were all the separate elements coming together in one, but I was like, why can't we just put them together and just mash them up? And cherry pick from all the best stuff, we were standing on the shoulders of giants. Why not pick up their dander, so to speak? And I said, let's bring all this stuff together. There's so many cool things. And of course, the first thing in my mind was, you get those darn neutrinos in there eventually somehow. And so what I thought of was this idea that the Turtles were actually reincarnated, that they were real brothers, and that this was really their father. And so I pitched this idea that was part of their origin story, that they have a history with Orokosaki, who becomes the Shredder, and that there's this centuries-long feud, centuries-long relationship that brings them to the modern New York City, which gives us so many other things to play with, plus, anybody on the toy side of things here, the audience is like, we can do a lot of toys in that. And I showed it to Kevin, and Kevin looked at me and he said, this will either work and it will crash, but either way, the fans are going to poop purple bricks.
purple Twinkies.
That's it. But Kevin, once I knew Kevin was on board, and let me say this right off the bat, everybody who knows him knows this is true. When you take a job to write something that is beloved, is iconic, has been now 30 years around and is as popular, if not more popular than ever, and then they say, oh, by the way, you're also going to work with a guy to help create it, I pooped purple bricks. I was petrified. I hadn't met Kevin in person. I had no clue what I was getting into. You know, and you know, when people are famous, you kind of get this idea. You imagine being, you know, egotistic and crazy and demanding. And Kevin is everything but that. This is one of the nicest people I've ever worked with. He was warm from the start. He was open. He loved ideas, supportive, gave interesting input, fantastic input. Sometimes he was willing for us to say, no, that might not work. And this has been the most enjoyable thing I've ever done as a creator in my life. And it's been 3 years now. I was hoping for 3 issues, and we've been going strong for 3 years. And a big part of that is just having Kevin on board to, I think, just keep us honest, keep us moving forward, but also just keep us smiling. And we work alongside our editor the whole time. His name is Bobby Turnow, and Bobby's a huge part of what's going on here. The Marine in 1987, what he would be doing in 2014, I never would have guessed I would be sitting 2 feet from my editor arguing about what Bebop and Rocksteady would say when they're stealing pizza. So, can't have a better job. So anyway, we sat down, we presented the proposal to Nickelodeon, and they were very open to this reincarnation idea, and then it was time to come together and do a comic book. And from the very start, including Kevin's covers and artwork he's done on some individual issues and annuals, we've had a wealth of riches of artists that have worked on our book. It's just been a fantastic crew, and I've been so lucky and so fortunate to be part of this. I can't thank them enough for being on this team with me. It feels like we're brothers. It feels like everybody who comes in is just a new member of the family. Right now we have an artist named Mateus Sanluco who's drawing the book. He's got the last candidate. None of this happens without our first artist, Dan Duncan. So Dan came out strong. Dan came out, all our artists have been on time. We got the books into the stores, and then we prayed that the fans would be okay with this reincarnation thing. And with some exceptions, obviously, fans have their own ideas how things should work. The reincarnation story, I think, is maybe the one thing that when we presented it, people said, this is kind of different. This is not what we were expecting. And from then, that point on, we were more emboldened to continue to tell the story we had plotted. We have a long story. I mean, we're in this for the long haul. If only you guys are with us, we're plotting way out. And we, at every turn, hope to surprise you, but not in a way that is something unexpected that you've never seen coming, but something that you've seen before, just in an unexpected way. And hopefully we continue to do that. It seems like it's working, and we thank everybody for supporting us. It's a book that's very successful. If it wasn't for those darn ponies, Turtles would be the most successful book at IDW. Speaking of crossovers, you do know that we finally got the green light, and that's going to come out starting in October. We are crossing over with the Ghostbusters. So the Turtles.
Yeah!
Which turns out to be an interesting crossover, mainly because I also edit Ghostbusters, so I'm super entrenched in both these books, and the person who's co-writing this crossover with me is Eric Burnham, who's also written a lot of our side comics, like Turtles in Time, Secret History of the Foot Clan, which is a great book. And so it's going to be a true crossover of not just properties, but of the creative teams, and these stories that we're telling in this crossover actually count as continuity and canon within our ongoing. So everything that happens there actually will count in both books. And it was fantastic that Sony and Nickelodeon allowed that. You know, usually they'll just say, just tell us a funny story and everybody will forget about it. And they said, if we're going to do it, make it count. And so it will. So again, thank you guys. I stumbled into this, but it seems like I've stayed upright, and he keeps holding me up, and we'll keep going forward.